Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. It's a football Friday right before conference championship weekend. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, since it's the conference championship weekend and we got a primetime matchup out in Southern California, we got to bring in the man, the myth, the legend, three-time All-Pro, L.A. Rams color analyst and NFL Network analyst Maurice Jones-Drew. And MJD, we just going to cut straight to it. I got to ask you about this game with Matt Stafford. How much pressure is on him to win this game on Sunday?
I don't think there's a lot of pressure on Stafford to win this game, to be honest with you guys. I think it's more on Sean McVay, right? Matthew Stafford has played exceptionally well throughout this time, but before Matthew got here, Sean hasn't beaten Kyle Shanahan the last 3 years. So I think it's more on the coaching staff and on the coach than it would be on the quarterback.
Yeah, MJD, what have you seen in the last 3 years of this divisional rivalry? Why has it been so lopsided?
Well, first and foremost, understand this. Kyle hired Sean McVay, right? So he brought him into Washington. Sean runs a version of that Shanahan outside zone play action pass offense. And obviously, if Kyle understands it and knows it, he taught it to Sean. He knows how to defend it, right? And so you see that. But the other thing is this. Offensively, Kyle's done a great job of just neutralizing Aaron Donald. They don't run at him. They run away from him. They make sure he's always chasing every play. And if they have to formation it and shift and motion and all these things, or if they just line up in it and they know that he's going to be away, they never run towards Aaron Donald. And then, obviously, when you're throwing the ball, they get the ball out quick, right? And so I want to say the last time the Rams won and beat the Niners, Aaron Donald had four sacks, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery. Like, he took over the game. And literally from that point on, Kyle's whole objective has been not allowing Aaron Donald to control the game, and that's kind of how they've been able to dominate.
MJD, putting this Niners defense under a microscope, we saw what they did against Aaron Rodgers in Lambeau. That was a masterclass in defensive play calling by D'Amico Ryans. That was a unit that ran a lot of zone coverage in that ball game, and we know Matt Stafford has struggled against – ran a lot of zone coverage, and we know Matt Stafford has struggled against zone coverage this season, 15 touchdowns to 12 interceptions. What do you think Matt Stafford has to do in order to move past that and try to be efficient when facing those zone coverages this time around?
Well, Chris, you know this. You can run zone when you're rushing the quarterback, right? When you can rush for four and get to the quarterback, zone works all the time. So they have they're fortunate enough to have Bosa and Eric Armstead and other guys, Samson Abukam and Arden Key and other guys that can rush the quarterback. They're blessed and fortunate enough to have that. If you don't have rushers and you run zone, you'll get tore apart. Quarterback has all the time in the world to sit back and they can cover. So Bosa and those guys, they get to the quarterback and they allow that zone to work. Now, that's something that they do very well with. When they play man, they give up a lot. And so expect D'Amico Ryans to play a ton of zone to bring some type of blitzes in timely situations. But it's all predicated off the rush. And I think a lot of people, we don't give the Niners enough credit for their rushing game plan, how they rushed the quarterback, right? How they kept Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. And if he had to step up, he had to step up through that B gap and then go outside. He never got a chance to get outside the DN. And so they have a plan when they want to rush and do certain things against the Rams. They just try to bully their offensive line and bull rush them. They love to do the hat in hand and push those guys back into the quarterback. And it's going to be on that offensive line to be able to sit heavy and kind of sit down a little bit and hold that bull rush off so that Matthew Stafford has time to find the open guy.
Canty and Golic Jr. talking to Maurice Jones-Drew with us here on the hotline. And looking at the other portion of this game, MJD, we've heard about the environment around there in SoFi, a chance to potentially host the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl on their home turf. But we've also heard about the influx of Niners fans. What do you expect the atmosphere to be like in this game, in this stadium, knowing the state of this rivalry?
Well, this is what people have to realize, right? The Rams left here in the mid-90s. And so from the mid-90s till 2016, how many birthdays, how many kids were born during that time? And your fan base, right, is mostly in St. Louis. And so this is a great parameter game. If you win this, you start to kind of change the tide a little bit, where the Niners, they go from the San Francisco to Santa Clara. and their fans stayed. And they have a huge fan base, and their fan base travels. It's not tough to travel from, obviously, the Bay Area where I'm from down here to L.A. So they're definitely going to have a bigger contingent, and they're going to have more fans that come down. That's awesome. But, you know, at the end of the day, listen, the Rams just went to Tampa Bay and beat the GOAT, right? The Rams have played on the road and played some tough teams, and they've played in some hostile environments this year and throughout the season. And so you can, right? You can go to, you went to Lambeau, yes, you lost, but you can lean on that experience on how you need to perform if it gets that way. In Week 18, the Rams played really well. It was a probably like 60-40 Niners fans to Rams fans, and it was loud, and it was a crazy thing. You have to expect that, and if that's what it is, then so be it. But to win an NFC championship game here in L.A., have the first time since, you know, whenever to have a championship game here in L.A., it's going to be exciting. And I think that, you know, this win is not necessarily only going to just talk about getting them into the Super Bowl. It's going to talk about changing some people's perspective on the Rams in the city of Los Angeles. And so I'll give you guys what I heard from a couple friends of mine who will be going to the game. Like, they're selling suites for $1 million. Right? Like, that to me is insane. That's insane. And so there are going to be people willing to pay that to see this type of game and see the Rams go out there and make plays. Expect them to go out there and perform well.
Yeah, so MJD, that's crazy. I don't know what to say when you told me that they're selling suites for $1 million for the game, but I'm going to try to pivot.
Tell me it another stadium like, they're doing that.
Yeah, it's crazy,
tell
man.
Tell me another stadium where they're doing that.
There is no other stadium where they're doing that. That's not happening nowhere else in the National Football League. I'll go ahead and answer that for you. It's definitely not happening in MetLife. But I'll ask you this question. Looking at the other side of the bracket, we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs being touchdown favorites against the Bengals. Now, the Bengals were able to best them in Week 17, but that's the regular season. This is the playoffs. This is the AFC Championship game. Are we dismissing the Cincinnati Bengals in this matchup?
I hope not. I think they're a really good team. Actually, one of my old college classmates and high school classmates, Brian Callahan, the OC, Joe Mixon from my hometown. So I love what the Bengals are doing. It's just hard to pick against a team that's averaging 42 points in the playoffs. That's all I'm saying. I mean, it's just hard. They're averaging 42 points. That's the Kansas City Chiefs. You saw the way they came back and beat arguably the hottest team in football in the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, it's tough to win in Kansas City. It's really tough to win. And I think Joe Burrow, if one person can do it, it's Joe Burrow. Because how do you beat a Tennessee team and you gave up 9 sacks, right? So this is going to be a high-scoring game. I don't know if it may be a touchdown game where, you know, it's tied or they're, you know, whatever it may be, and they got to go down and score to win. But I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Kansas City's defense hasn't been playing really well. Patrick Mahomes is back to being Patrick Mahomes, and our offense is back to being that. But, you know, in order to beat the Chiefs, you're going to have to score, we used to say 40. You almost have to score 50 points in a game to beat the Chiefs. And so that puts a lot of pressure on your offense to go out there and score touchdowns on every drive. And, you know, if you kick field goals, you're just not going to have an opportunity to do it. So I think they got it right with the 7 points, because in order to beat them, you got to be up there in the mid-40s to 50 points a game to try to get past these guys.
Maurice Jones-Drew with us on the hotline, former Jacksonville Jaguars running back. And MJD, we know that job up in the air right now. Between the head coaching vacancy and certainly the situation, the reports that we've heard around GM, what should Jacksonville do going forward with who they have leading their team?
Well, I think this. I think, listen, at the end of the day, if you want that coach and that coach wants to work with certain people, you got to do that, right? Like, Trent Baalke's been there. He was there with Dave Caldwell. He was part of the hire of Urban Meyer. It didn't work out. It hasn't worked out, right? And so, for me, I feel like, look, Byron, if you want Byron to be your guy, and I think Byron was one of my top guys that I wanted the Jags to be able to sign just because he was there when I was there. He taught me how to play the game, the game at the national football level, at the NFL level. He's a guy that's been in the same shoes as your quarterback. He understands what it takes to win. He's called plays a ton, right? And so if he's telling you that he can't work with a certain person, that he would like to work with someone else, if you want to hire him, I think you should do that. And that to me is the most important thing. Like, you want to give your coach every opportunity to feel successful and feel like he has a say-so on what's going on.
MJD, we appreciate the time and the insight on all this, man. Really do. Enjoy the game this weekend. We're looking forward to it. Hopefully we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Yeah, listen, and I just keep asking. I just want to know another stadium where they're selling $1 million worth of suites. That's all. Like, one suite worth for $1 million. If y'all can tell me that, then, hey, man, I need to go find that team too.
You know what? We will be on the lookout for that. 888-SAY-ESPN. If anyone knows another stadium selling $1 million suites here, we'll wait in the meantime. But you guys can catch Maurice Jones-Drew on the NFL Network as well as doing the Los Angeles Rams color analysis here. The three-time All-Pro kind enough to join us on the show getting ready for this weekend.
Gojo, I need better friends because I feel like I should be a part of the friend group of whoever that is that's buying a suite for $1 million for the NFC Championship game. Like that's all I'm saying.
I never want to be the one buying it. I want to know someone who's buying it here. It's like having a boat. You never want to be the one owning the boat. There's a lot of upkeep, a lot of things that go into that, but you want to have the friend who's got a boat. That's what we need with the suite situation. So if you want to be a friend of Canny Angola Jr. and maybe take us to the game this weekend in that $1 million suite, our phone line is open to you. But coming up next, let's get into what we talked with MJD about with Cincinnati here. Are people starting to sleep on Joe Burrow and the Bengals next on ESPN Radio?
Guys fold when I know the pressure's coming. That's not Joe Burrow.
Don't you know that I'm trouble?
I'm tired of the underdog narrative. We're a really, really good team. We're here to make noise.
This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. It's Mike Golic Jr. It's Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes bundling easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your car, home, motorcycle, commercial, auto, and more. All your protection in one place. Bundle and save at progressive.com. And Gojo, we got to dive a little bit closer into this matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals and the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game because a lot of folks are dismissing the Bengals' chances of making this even a competitive game given what we've seen from that Chiefs offense this postseason. They boat raced the Pittsburgh Steelers in the wild card round. You saw an epic thriller between them and the Buffalo Bills where they seemed like they were on the ropes, 14 seconds left in the game, and down by three, and yet somehow, some way, found a way to be able to tie that game up. Got into overtime. Pat Mahomes took care of his business once they won the coin toss. It just seems like this is one of those spots, because this is the Bengals' first time there on this stage, everybody is assigning a level of success to the Kansas City Chiefs and dismissing the Bengals' chances of making this a real game. Where do you fall on this? Where do you see this game going? What do you think the game script is going to ultimately end up looking like?
I'm one of those people you just described. Like, Chris, we sat here at the beginning of the week, and I thought, man, Bengals plus +7, that seems like pretty good bet here. This team's been able to overcome so much, yada, yada. And then I just sat here long, and then I went back and watched that Bills-Chiefs game from last weekend. Then I went back and even checked out the game that they played earlier this season, the Bengals and the Chiefs. And, Chris, the more and more I look at it, I just cannot see a world where the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, where Steve Spagnuolo and company allow Ja'Marr Chase to go off for 266 yards in the manner that they did, leaving Buddy isolated out there with DBs that were in way over their head in that spot. I said this at the top of the show, Chris. After the Super Bowl last year, I started to believe certain things were true about football again, despite what changed. I don't believe you can keep living in a world. He was sacked 4 times in the first matchup, 9 times in the last game. And if that continues this week the way I think it will with Melvin Ingram and Chris Jones rushing the passer, I just don't think the Bengals can survive, especially with what the Chiefs are doing on offense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think Spags is going to let Ja'Marr Chase have that kind of impact this time around. And you saw what the Chiefs did against Stephon Diggs, right? I think he had 3 catches for 7 yards. He was a non-factor outside of that 2-point conversion. So I'm imagining a similar game plan in trying to slow Chase down, bracketing him, having somebody inside, having somebody outside, having a safety over the top, having a corner in the trail position. They're not going to let Chase be able to be that safety valve for Joe Burrow. But I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on the rest of the secondary for the Chiefs. And so guys like Legarius Sneed and Juan Thornhill, they're going to have to step up because they're going to be in one-on-one spots with T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd and C.J. Uzoma. And can they hold those guys in check? Because let's not forget, in that game against the Bills, Gabriel Davis went off for 8 catches, 201 yards, and 4 touchdowns. And the shortest touchdown that he caught was 18 yards out. So I think this is a situation where that Chiefs secondary has to be up for the task in terms of preparing for the other threats that that Bengals offense has. Because, Gojo, we talked about this a little bit earlier during the week. I can make an argument that the Cincinnati Bengals, when it comes to their skill position core, is a little better off than the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I think it could be a little bit deeper and more robust at this point. Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. But I think, Chris, what you just described, the game plan that we saw last week that the Chiefs used to try and make that a reality against the Buffalo Bills is certainly going to have some relevance. But we also got to remember, as we talk about injury heading into this weekend, the one to keep an eye on for Kansas City is Tyrann Mathieu. Missed yes. most of that game, went out early against Buffalo in the concussion protocol. The last I heard yesterday, he was a full participant in practice, but still listed in the concussion protocol, meaning he's got to go. There's a for anyone unfamiliar, there's a baseline concussion test that you take at the beginning of the year. You have got to be able to pass the test as you did at that baseline level at the beginning of the season in order to get out of that protocol. That's what they're still waiting for from Tyrann Mathieu as of yesterday. We'll wait and see what the news has today on that. But, Chris, that changes the whole dynamic in the way that you can deploy some of the guys you just mentioned. Juan Thornhill, we certainly know the target on the back of I'm forgetting Buddy's name in the secondary right now. I usually just call him touchdown because usually Daniel he's six Sorensen. Strikes of the band when Daniel Sorensen's in coverage there.
So, Daniel Sorensen.
Yeah, Daniel Sorensen being the one on top there. So all of that is going to hinge, I think, a lot on Tyrann Mathieu in this game. This is one of those spots, Chris, where the Joe Burrow story, you and I talked about this yesterday, who has the most to gain going into this weekend. I know we've talked so glowingly about what Joe's been able to do in 2 years in this franchise, but it's also, I think, about being realistic now of the team that they're facing is just the better version of them. This is as bad as I think, bad in air quotes, as I think the Bengals are going to be for a while, and they're going up against a team in Kansas City that figured out how to reinvent itself within the body of a couple of months this season.
No doubt about it. And the one thing that I will take away from that Week 17 matchup that surprised me a little bit is that Lou Anarumo, the defensive coordinator for the Bengals, he used that secondary 70% of the time. Those guys were in zone coverage, but they disguised less than 15% of the time. Gojo, if you're talking about playing against a quarterback like Pat Mahomes, you can't let him know pre-snap what kind of coverage you're going to be in. And he's going to tear you apart. He's going to pick you apart. And so I think that's the part of this where the Bengals have got to have a wrinkle in their defensive game plan, especially with their coverage schemes going up against this outfit. Now, to their credit, they did a good job of holding Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce in check. And that Bengals defense held the Chiefs offense to only 3 points in the second half of that ball game when they faced off a few weeks ago. So I hear them where they're saying they've got to make sure that when you get in the red area, they make them kick field goals and not score touchdowns. I think that's ultimately what this game is going to come down to. And a big part of that also has to be what the Bengals defensive front does, because they're going to have to come up with some interesting ways to be able to get after Pat Mahomes. We saw the second reaction plays from Pat against the Bills. We saw him use his legs as a weapon in that game. That's not what the Bengals can afford to let happen. They've got to figure out a different strategy. It's clear that rushing four in a conventional way is not going to work. I could see a scenario where they rush three guys and they have a spy or a low hole defender. So when Pat Mahomes takes off or when you want to add on late in the rush, that could be a possibility. But they're going to have to be creative with their front and coverage in order to try to slow down the Chiefs offense, because right now they're next level.
That's just one matchup. Coming up next, we'll give you the most intriguing looks on the field for both teams heading into the championship weekend of the NFL. Next, Kenny and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canny 99. And Gojo, we just got through topping it up about the Bengals and the Chiefs game. It's only right that we look at the Rams and the 49ers. And this is one of those situations where this is chapter three in a given season. Division rivals, the Rams had a chance to keep the 49ers out of the playoffs, but Matt Stafford and that offense melted down in the second half and overtime. And that's how the 49ers punched their ticket into the tournament, and now the Rams have to see that same team in their building in conference championship weekend, and this is a situation where the Rams won. I mean, the Rams lost the season series. They got swept by the 49ers, and teams that are facing off for the third times, the team that actually won is 20-12 in that third matchup. So it doesn't necessarily bode well for the Rams when you look at history, and then you also look at Sean McVay head-to-head against Kyle Shanahan. But tell me why this game has a potential to be different.
Yeah, let's take a look at that as part of our weekend preview brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico is going to make it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. Why not jazz it up a little bit here? Renee, go ahead and hit the sound.
49ers at Rams.
Why does he, hold on, why does he say it that fast?
49ers at Rams.
It's usually so much slower than that here. Hold on, I need you to play the Bengals at Chiefs sounder quick.
Bengals at Chiefs.
All right, he's saying it that fast for both of them. I thought
consistent. Oh, he's consistent.
He is consistent. In the past, those have been way slower here. I digress.
49ers at Rams.
He's terrifying.
Listen, we don't got time to mess around, baby. It's championship weekend. Let's go.
Apparently it is. Dear God. All right, let's start with the NFC side of this, Chris, because we've talked so much about the main weapons in this game, and Cooper Kupp for the Rams is going to be that big focal point for the 49ers defensive secondary. We look at the job that they did against Devontae Adams last weekend in Green Bay, right? We knew he was going to come in and be the focus there for that defensive side of the football. So I'll go on this one. It was one of the same guys I thought about really looking at last week. Tyler Higbee, tight end for the Los Angeles Rams. You go back to their last matchup in Week 18, he's a guy that's able to help them out big time in regular season matchups, and both of them this year. San Fran played zone on 70% of those snaps, meaning they're going to need that passing game that can exploit it in the middle. Tyler Higbee has been his security blanket. Chris, that's not only in the passing game, but we saw really effective screen game against teams that have a defensive front like this. Tyler Higbee's a guy they like to use right in the mix on all of that. And if you're looking for, I know Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be a big third down buster for you, but I think Matthew Stafford has really shown in critical moments, Tyler Higbee's a guy he looks to early and often.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good matchup to highlight. I'm going to go in the trenches, Gojo. Big surprise there, right? I'm looking at Austin Corbett going head-to-head against Arik Armstead. If you didn't see that game against Green Bay, Arik Armstead dominated that offensive line, and he's been on a tear. He's got 6 sacks over the course of the last 4 games. They're going to have to find a way to be able to hold up in one-on-one protection on the inside against that big guy, because as MJD pointed out when he came on a few moments ago, when you have that zone coverage in your secondary, the only way that works is if that front four can get after it. And that's something that the 49ers have been doing at a really high level, especially late in the season on into the playoffs.
It's been, I think, the crux of this game, you're right, lives in the trenches in that way, Chris. And both sides we talked about built of similar DNA. That's why I think to your point about the other rushers in this game, right? Because looking on the other side, the other matchup I really liked in this one, Von Miller going up against really any of the tackles for the 49ers. But I think in particular, if Trent Williams is coming into this game less than what we usually see, and we know he's battling that ankle injury coming off last weekend, they're still waiting to make sure he's going to be a full go in this one. But Chris, if he's anything less than 100%, I don't know where he found it. Von Miller hit the fountain of youth again. That dude was shot out of a freaking cannon against the Bucs last weekend. We saw him giving Donovan Smith and company hell in that game in the speed that he burst off the ball. And we know if that guy and the freakish gifts he has on display, paired opposite Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd on that D-line, he's going to get plenty of one-on-one. And if Trent, who's normally best tackle in football, if he's less than up to the challenge for that, that's going to change the whole equation for the 49ers O-line.
Yeah, that's a great call, Gojo. Von Miller is leading in the postseason in pass rush win rate. So that's something that Kyle Shanahan is going to have to account for. And I think the way that he does it is by not letting Von Miller have any open edges. I think George Kittle is going to have something to say about being able to help out with those offensive tackles. But then beyond that, one of the things that Von Miller and Aaron Donald have to do in order to get opportunities to get after Jimmy Garoppolo is stop the run. That's why my key matchup is Elijah Mitchell, running back for the 49ers, going up against Troy Reader. Gojo, they still haven't found a way to be able to stop Elijah Mitchell. In the 2 games that they played in the regular season, Mitchell has had 48 carries for 176 yards. What do you think Kyle Shanahan is going to do, especially after he saw the way that Jimmy Garoppolo played in the divisional round against the Green Bay Packers? You think he's going to trust that guy, or do you think he's going to trust that offensive line in that running game? So that's why, for me, it starts with Elijah Mitchell and Troy Reader. He's going to have to find a way to be able to get in that backfield, create some negative plays on early downs and distances, and force the 49ers to be in obvious drop-back situations so those guys up front can hunt. If that doesn't happen, then I don't think Aaron Donald and Von Miller will have the opportunity to impact the game in the way of rushing the passer that a lot of people are projecting.
Yeah, even when the Niners got down in that Week 18 matchup, they were down 17-0. It was that before halftime, 2-minute drill to get a field goal on the board. But to your point, Chris, they didn't panic. They just beat them up inside with those guys. They were breaking tackles left and right. It was a mentality from the Niners that got them back when they were down. Because to your point, Jimmy Garoppolo, yet to throw for a score in these playoffs and only 2 touchdowns versus 5 interceptions in his 5 postseason starts. So if they can keep it off him, they're going to do their damnedest.
No question about it, but just a fun fact, Gojo, this defense for the Rams hadn't allowed a quarterback to have over 100 passer rating since Week 13. The last quarterback to have over 100 passer rating against the Rams, one Jimmy Garoppolo.
How about that? All right, you know what? Jimmy Garoppolo, always going to be the lightning rod of this postseason. He is by far the distant fourth of the quarterbacks that we've got remaining on Wild Card Weekend, but that is not going to stop folks in San Fran from putting on their capes for a guy who goes out there and wins football games. We'll get to the AFC matchup and some intriguing on-field matchups that we got for that game coming up in a little bit. But coming up next, as we get down to the wire on some of these head coaching vacancies, we've got 7 remaining vacancies of the 9 we started the offseason with. And as we near the end of the process for one team in New York that Chris Canty has some familiarity with, we'll try and weigh the pros and cons of 2 of the prime candidates that appear to be at the top of this job. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
They said we were nuts back in the fall of 1979, saying that all sports 24 hours a day would make it on TV. And now you say we're nuts trying to start ESPN Radio? We're dead serious. We know you like us on TV, and if you do, you'll love us on radio.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance and Gojo. And then there were 3. That's the state of the Giants coaching search. The New York Football Giants narrowing it down to 3 candidates that they feel are the finalists for this gig. Of course, Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, who of course has ties to new general manager Joe Shane. Brian Flores, the coach that was fired from the Miami Dolphins this offseason, and then Leslie Frazier, defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. And so a lot of speculation about which way new general manager Joe Shane will go, but we've heard nothing but positive things from the 2 favorites in this, which are Brian Daboll and Brian Flores. Now, the question becomes whether or not Brian Daboll is in strong consideration for that Dolphins job and how quickly that organization moves to make a decision. But I think that's the 2 candidates that it would likely come down to for the New York Giants for their next coaching hire.
Yeah, Chris, that's so interesting to see Brian Daboll choosing between those 2, because I think in a lot of ways they're similar jobs in that you've got young quarterbacks coming over who have had a tough road so far in the circumstances around them. Changes in coordinator, and to his case, being shuffled in and out of the lineup coming off that hit injury. We heard from John Mara, the Giants owner, about what he believes they've put Daniel Jones through the first round of this. And I know I've looked at Chris Greer and the Dolphins situation, Chris, and talked about how difficult I think that is to sell a head coach coming in, that relationship with a GM who doesn't necessarily have the best track record. But man, looking at what we would have if it's Brian Daboll choosing between those 2, I still end up leaning Giants on this, Chris, even knowing the Dolphins, have cap space and picks to work with down there. I just feel like some of that surrounding situation hasn't felt right in a while there for Miami. And consequently, in this spot in New York, you'd be working with someone who you know their football DNA and makeup in a way that's going to make working together a lot easier.
Yeah, I think for me, if I was in that situation with Brian Daboll, it would be about the autonomy that the general manager and ownership would give me in making a decision about who my quarterback is going to be. Because that situation down in Miami started to go left when Brian Flores started to make overtures about trying to trade for Deshaun Watson. It was rumored that he was the guy that was pushing for the organization to trade for Watson, and general manager Chris Greer was on the other side of that wanting to develop Tua. And I think that's ultimately what ended up ousting him from the Miami Dolphins. And so if I was Brian Daboll, I would want to know from ownership and from Chris Greer that if a year into this thing I didn't think Tua was my guy, I would have the ability to then go out and find my guy, whether it's in the draft or via trade or free agency. I'm not sure that Chris Greer is going to be willing to do that. It feels like owner John Mara is more amenable to that with the New York Giants because of what it's looked like over the course of the last 5 years under Dave Gettleman.
Yeah, I think if you're going down to Miami, you have to believe in part that you can do it with Tua right now and that you're going to be able to shore up that offensive line that's been the issue here. But Chris, Canty and Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio, I want to spin it to the New York Giants a little more because you mentioned the three names involved in all this. Certainly Brian Daboll and Brian Flores have gotten the most pub of these three as far as being the potential candidates here, with Leslie Frazier also involved here at the top, Bills defensive coordinator, who we know our very own Christine Lisi loves and respects and admires dearly around here. But Chris, if you're looking at those candidates, which of those three looks the most like the Giants' next head coach to you and what you'd want with a head coach?
It's Brian Daboll, and I look at the synergy that he could potentially have with Joe Shane, and that being reminiscent of what we've seen in Buffalo with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. Remember, those two came over from the Carolina Panthers. It was somewhat of a package deal, and so I like the idea of those two guys working together because they're working off of the same game script. They're working off of the same game plan. From a philosophical standpoint, they believe in the same things because we saw the culture that was created in Buffalo. And former Giants offensive line coach Pat Flaherty, we call him Flats, he interviewed in Buffalo a couple of years ago, and he said that that was a really comfortable environment. They made him feel at home. But more importantly, just in terms of the things that are fundamental to having success in today's game, he agreed with them on. And I think you see a lot of correlation with that on the field. And then beyond that, their ability to be able to develop a quarterback and then put the requisite pieces around him. You can't argue with the resume. It shows. And so I think with this regime, you're going to get some definitive answers on Daniel Jones. And if Daniel Jones turns out not to be your guy, I have confidence that they can identify who the franchise quarterback should be in the draft and then develop that player. So I'll always lean that direction. I like Brian Flores as a coach. He's proven that he can do the job at a high level. Back-to-back winning seasons down in Miami, that hadn't happened in about 20 years. So there's something to be said for that. But then you also have a little bit of that New England Patriots element with Brian Flores. And let's keep in mind, they're just coming out of that with Joe Judge. So I don't know the appetite that ownership has to go down a similar path with Flores. Although I do think Flores is just a completely different class of coach than Joe Judge.
Yeah, oh, and I think he displayed as much. Like, Chris, the one thing we don't have to do in retrospect is act like there wasn't success way sooner than people anticipated with the Dolphins. Hell, it's part of the reason we're here now. In addition to what you said, I think a major discrepancy about what they wanted to do, especially relative to Deshaun Watson and the future of that quarterback position. The reason they were there is because the year prior, they flirted with being a playoff team. They made that switch from Ryan Fitzpatrick to Tua Tagovailoa, and he was able to coach them through to all that success. So he's got the advantage of having done that job before, Chris. We talk all the time about what the role of head coaching experience, how much should it matter in this spot? I think that's jumped by what you mentioned there. You've got a coach that's seen how the plan can work when you go in and try and develop around a quarterback, and I think they're going to get the runway in New York to make that decision with Daniel Jones if that ends up being the quarterback that they don't want to go with in that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be, like you said, they're not going to be in a hurry. There's no urgency to make sure that this team is in the playoffs or playoff contention in year one. And the Giants are tired of being in the cycle of hiring and firing coaches every 2 years. So whoever their next head coach is, they're going to have the opportunity to grow. And if it's a guy that's first time in that role, you'll have a chance to develop his own style. And I think the Giants are going to be a little more patient with this. So I think I lean toward Brian Daboll, but I wouldn't rule out Brian Flores either.
That's going to be the future for the Giants. Coming up next, let's take a look at the future of this weekend. We got some star-studded matchups on the field. We'll try and figure out who we'd take between some of the best players in the NFL next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.